Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion on politics, human rights, and the environment. I'm Dori Smith.
The confrontation over this tribunal has sort of been sucked into this much, much larger confrontation.
World focus has been on Egypt over the past few weeks of news, yet there have also been protests in Beirut over the setting up of a new government there. We're joined by scholar and journalist Heiko Vimmen. He provides an overview of the political landscape of Lebanon, and he's covered politics there for German print and broadcast media since the late 1990s. Heiko Vimmen is author of The Long Steep Fall of the Lebanon Tribunal, published in Middle East Report Online in December. Heiko Vimmen, welcome.
It's a pleasure.
Just tell us about Najib Mikati first, who he is. He's been described as a consensus candidate, also by the Western media as a billionaire who is trained in business.
Well, Lebanon has quite a few billionaires in politics, and his predecessor, Mr. Hariri, of course, also is a billionaire. Najib Mikati is from Tripoli. That's sort of the northern capital of Lebanon, the second city after Beirut. He is a Sunni Muslim, which is remarkable, first of all, because he has to be a Sunni to be prime minister, but also because the Sunni sect or the religious community has been represented over the past years almost exclusively by Hariri, by Rafiq Hariri, and now here is a contender. Now, he has been nominated he's being supported by the opposition bloc, composed of Hezbollah, Harkat Amal, which is another Shia party, and a Christian party. Those people want to see Hariri out of power. In particular, Hezbollah wants to scrap the tribunal that should investigate the murder of Hariri, the father. They want to get rid of it because they think they will be indicted. Rumors have been going around the court saying that. So they want this to be scrapped, and they nominated Mikati to oppose Hariri, and so far that has been a successful move.
And talk about his relationship with Hezbollah and what it means for Lebanon.
His relationship to Hezbollah is not very clear. What is clear is his relationship to Syria. Mikati has important business interests in Syria. He is reportedly close to the Syrian regime, and as you may know, as your listeners may know, Syria, of course, is a strategic ally of Hezbollah. Syria supplies to Hezbollah what we may call strategic depth. It's a conduit for the arms that Hezbollah receive. And to some extent, Hezbollah also does Syria's bidding in Lebanon. It's a mutually beneficial arrangement. So there is some sort of confluence of interest, and for Mr. Mikati to assume this post, to take this position, is also a way to present an alternative to the hegemony, if you want to say, of the Hariri family over the political representation of the Sunni sect in Lebanon.
And does the fact that Mikati is a telecom tycoon give him any kind of special advantage as a politician, you know, due to access to the media?
No, telecom and media are obviously two different things. I mean, he's a millionaire, or billionaire, rather, and he obviously already, economic power gives you power to influence media and to be present in media if you so wish. What is important to know is that in Lebanon, as well as in Syria, by the way, where part of his telecom business also lies, telecom is a very important source of government revenue. So being involved in that sector almost by default means you are closely involved in politics. And Najib Mikati indeed has been in politics for quite a while. He was a prime minister of a transition government in 2005. He has been an MP for a while, and those are two things that almost come in a package.
And talk about the reports of an alliance formed with both Hezbollah's Hassan Nasrallah and also the Druze leader, Walid Jumblatt.
This is in place, and actually this has been coming for a while. Walid Jumblatt is more or less considered by consensus the weather vane of Lebanese politics. So wherever the wind blows, you can find out by looking at Walid Jumblatt. So Walid Jumblatt was one of the loudest, one of the most vociferous spokespeople of the bloc formed around and by the Hariris. Walid Jumblatt was very much opposed to Hezbollah over the past years, between 2005 and 2008. And then in 2008, something very important happened. There was a confrontation that turned military in Beirut, mainly between Hezbollah, was then not in part of the government, and the government, which was then like controlled by the Hariri party. And in that confrontation, all the diplomatic support, all the assurances that were given before to this camp that Jumblatt was part of, by the Americans, by the Europeans, hold out, we support you, stand firm, stand your ground against Hezbollah, stand your ground against their weapons, and so on and so forth. All of that turned out to be entirely worthless. The military confrontation was over within a few hours. No hand was raised to the support of this political bloc. And at that point, and from that point onwards, Mr. Jumblatt basically read the signs on the wall. He decided, I believe, that the American project in the Middle East that he had banked on after 2005, he and others, that this project was an eclipse and was going nowhere. And then he looked at the map once again and he saw where Lebanon is located and that there's no choice but to make up with the Syrians. There's no choice but to make up with Hezbollah, which is the strongest force in Lebanon. And so he has been basically edging towards this new alliance that we now see manifest for more than 2 years. And although he ran in the last elections, he still ran on the Hariri ticket or in an alliance with the Hariris. Already back then, during that election, or before this election, there was speculation that he would take a centrist position, i.e. he would like separate his link to the Hariri party and the bloc and be something of a neutral player. But already then, it looked more like, well, he might be actually gravitating towards the opposition, and that move is now complete.
It seems that supporters of Hariri mm-hmm. have called this new leader a traitor to his people. I don't know if that is based on his being a Sunni or mm-hmm. if it is for political reasons, but either way, do his views, do you think, turn out to be more sympathetic to the opposition, or is this just a matter of convenience?
It's always hard to judge, looking at Lebanese politics, where conscience ends and convenience starts and to what extent they might actually be overlapping. There's not much to indicate what is actually the political convictions that Mikati has. He has not been tested, obviously, as prime minister. He was there for 2 months, something like 2 or 3 months in 2005. That was just basically a logistic challenge to organize the transition and everything. Him being close to Syria, again, out of conviction or out of convenience, is another question. Sort of entails that whatever political positions he will express and pursue are going to be pretty much sympathetic to or liable to be sympathetic to the line of thought that's advocated by Hezbollah and their allies. That said, however, we should remember Mikati was elected in 2009 as part of an alliance with the Hariris. Now, that was to some extent a tactical alliance. Lebanon has a majority system, first past the post, so alliances are often struck in order to enable certain trade-offs. You give me a few voters in this district, and I tell my people in that district to vote for you, etc. But bottom line, and he was seen so far as being in the Hariri camp rather than being in the Hezbollah camp. Now, taking up this position that he's taking now, to some extent, at least betrays the expectations of many people who voted for him in 2009. We can say that, although one may say, well, those expectations might have been misplaced in the first place. And talking about being a traitor, of course, as you indicated, goes further than just betraying what may be the voters wanted who voted for you. It is indeed the position here is that Hariri is the legitimate representative of the Sunni community, partly because of his father's assassination. His father's assassination, to some extent, to a large extent, made Hariri and the Hariri family into an icon of the Sunni community. So now here comes this person who positions himself against what the overwhelming majority of this community sees as its legitimate representative, positions himself in a way that, at least at this point in time, seemed to benefit the fiercest opponents of Hariri. So judging from this perspective and from a sectarian political outlook, I'm not surprised that they call him a traitor.
And in terms of the special tribunal, the Hariri assassination, which countries might play a role as, you know, potential negotiators or mediators even?
No, this is a process that actually has been going on for quite a while, and it's part of a large confrontation or of a larger struggle, if you want. And that is the confrontation and the division in the region between so-called moderate Arab countries, i.e. countries that basically go along with what the United States and Europe want for the region, would go along with whatever further peace agreements with Israel might be signed, stand against Iran, or at least are very concerned about Iran, and would perhaps not mind to see military action taken against Iran, etc. And the second camp, which includes, besides Hezbollah, Syria, Hamas in Palestine, and Iran, who basically takes a very confrontational position. The story of this tribunal, the confrontation over this tribunal, has sort of been sucked into this much, much larger confrontation by all those rumors and leaks that by now amount to a flood, rather, which basically claim that this tribunal is actually indicting Hezbollah, and in this way it has become a part of that much larger conflict. Now, if you're asking about which countries in the region could play a role in solving this potentially, the answer is very clear. Those who have already been trying, Syria and Saudi Arabia, they have been talking for quite a while how to solve this problem. They're talking on behalf of their Lebanese clients and allies. They've been talking through them, they've been talking with them, all combinations you can possibly think of, and it has come to no good. Now, it is claimed that some sort of agreement has been reached whereby Hariri would basically relinquish support for this tribunal and in exchange for some, say, tactical gains within the narrow Lebanese balance of power game and all of this. A paper that has this as a contender has been floated by Walid Chamblat, by the way, and I'm actually at a loss if you ask me if to what extent Hariri and his people have acknowledged that this paper exists and that this is something they would do. I don't think they did, and I sincerely doubt that if such an agreement ever existed or was talked about, that Hariri could actually do it without more or less completely losing his standing as a leader of the Sunni community in Lebanon. He has connected his political future to this tribunal to an extent that would make it very, very difficult to stop pursuing it.
The Obama administration, like the Bush administration before them, have tolerated or supported in some ways the Tunisians. We've seen this compromising, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so what does that mean for the leadership in Lebanon, given that people are out in the streets there too? I mean, if the American government has made its decision one way or another, what does that mean?
Well, first of all, you absolutely have to differentiate between Egypt and or Tunisia and Lebanon. In Tunisia and Egypt, you're talking about authoritarian regimes who suppress their population, and who are doing a very bad job in terms of providing for them. In Lebanon, the situation is completely different. Here, we could talk about what kind of democracy they have there and to what degree that is a good thing or not. But what happens if people go on the street is not that they are asking whatever oppressive rulers to relinquish power or to improve their behavior or whatever. If people in Lebanon go to the streets, they go to the streets in support of a certain sectarian position. You know, it's a divided society. You have divided by religious sects mainly, and you have mobilization, you have popular mobilization that in support of certain positions expressed and pursued by the leaders of these communities. Now, of course, those leaders, one will always go and present that as the voice of the people, the will of the people, etc. The truth of the matter is, in Lebanon, you have several people, if you put it that way, and whatever you have in street demonstrations in Lebanon, like, as a rule, don't believe that this is a spontaneous manifestation. Don't believe that you see the voice of the people speaking. There are exceptions to that rule, and 2005 was an exception. But in general, the situation is very different from what you can see in Egypt, and you cannot compare that. I think what we can say is that perhaps in 2005, the Bush administration made a very important strategic error, or maybe it was an error of understanding, by believing that the demonstrations, the public manifestations you had in Lebanon in 2005 was a genuine democratic movement that was bearing likeness to what happened at the same time almost in the Ukraine or a few years earlier in parts of Eastern Europe like Serbia and other places. And from that mistaken understanding onwards, they decided, here are the Democrats, let's support them. And then you have this other faction, those are all like people who are still under the spell of a misguided, oppressive leadership, and they just need to be freed by better example. And now we support the pro-Western politicians who have shown that they can all bring all these people to the streets in Lebanon, etc. And that's the course they took for the following years. That was entirely misconceived. It was entirely misreading, or maybe, and I think actually intentionally, misread the situation, which was really that one particular group was in the streets at some point, and it happened to be at a certain point in time that particular group turned out, or combination of groups turned out to be more numerous than other combinations of groups, a situation that changed very quickly. And now it has turned the other way around, or perhaps the country is divided exactly down the middle. So here you have a difference, a very crucial difference between a place like Lebanon and a place like Tunisia, which is not divided down the middle. It's pretty, so far, I think, it's pretty much united in wanting something else. So now that is a situation that is completely different. And I believe the U.S. and other Western governments are very well advised to welcome this change. I don't think, by the way, that European governments or American governments necessarily thought all this time that the regimes in Egypt or Tunis are so great and that we support them because we can't imagine anything better happen to these places. But that the idea was basically, what would be the alternative? Is there an alternative? What would happen to stability in these countries? So maybe this is a bad situation, but all other choices might look considerably worse.
It seems interesting now that the U.S. could potentially play a role if there is continued American acceptance, at any rate, of Makati.
American diplomats have been visiting Lebanon very intensely over the past 5 years or so. I mean, Lebanon, to some extent, was the poster child of American support of democracy in the region, of support of pro-American, pro-Western moderate forces, and etc., against the forces of ideological anti-Americanism, anti-Israeli, anti-Semitism, what have you. So they've been there all the time, and not only Hillary Clinton. And in fact, the American ambassador in Lebanon has like actively intervened in the naming of the prime minister by visiting individual MPs and trying to sway their opinion, which did not go down very well with the Lebanese public, obviously. I think the American government should respect the constitutional process in Lebanon. So far, all that has happened is entirely according to what the Lebanese constitution says. I find it disturbing if, as a result of entirely democratic and constitutional processes, the American senators or politicians, even Ms. Clinton herself, I think, start thinking loudly about reducing support for Lebanon. The position, of course, is we won't support a country where a terrorist organization is part of the government. Fine, that is the position. But let's look at Gaza. What happened? What was the successes of trying to internationally to make a party that won democratic elections, fair elections, of making them into an international outcast, of not talking to them, of not cooperating with anybody who even has a brother in relation to that organization? You know, if you are an NGO and you employ somebody who has a brother who is in Hamas, then this NGO will not be eligible for funds. So these policies in Palestine were obviously, as not everybody today now recognizes, were a disaster and were a complete failure. I don't think they should be repeated elsewhere. And I think if the United States claim to be, as they do, a friend of Lebanon, that should not hinge on the party that the American diplomacy likes being in power and should disappear once another party comes to power that maybe they don't like that much. That's not how relations between sovereign countries should be.
Well, is there still a chance for Hariri to sort of disavow the Lebanon Tribunal? And also, finally, we see Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, according to Agence France-Presse, telling the Lebanese people and the world, Lebanon must decide their own future. And she is quoting the Jordan government in that too, you know, saying national unity is what is called for here. Reading between the lines, is that about not only Gaza, but also Iran?
It's definitely about Iran, and it's definitely also about Syria. But, I mean, let's face it, Lebanon is at a strategic location in a geopolitical fault line, and all people who are interested, all countries who have a stake in this conflict, are putting their spoon into this pot, you know, and are trying to steer that pot at the expense, of course, of the ordinary Lebanese. And so, I mean, that call for letting the Lebanese people decide is a bit disingenuous if you look at the way the American diplomacy has been involved in that pot over the past. And I mentioned the visit by the ambassador to individual MPs and other things. Now, talking about the options that Hariri has, it would be very, very difficult for him to disavow this tribunal. I can imagine a scenario whereby he would adopt a position basically saying that for the sake of the country, for the sake of unity, to avoid much larger harm, etc., etc., there's also the option of like trying to find a compromise formula that says, you know, we want this to continue, but we want to basically have a say, and we want to decide whether we find the results convincing, you know, that the investigation has come up with. So far, there's no such process. The investigation is a completely independent legal procedure. They arrive at results, and the Lebanese government and Lebanese government institutions are only requested and required to carry out assistance, yani to arrest the suspects. If those suspects don't come on their own accord to Den Haag, then the Lebanese government would have to arrest them and send them there. The Lebanese government is in no position, has no right, according to those regulations that Lebanon itself finds, of course, to in any way question the findings or to in any way look at them and say, well, we are not convinced. And so basically, that could be a track on which one could work and say, okay, let's try to look a formula that introduces another process where Lebanon has more of a say, and then Hariri would, when this happens and when those files become public for everybody to look at, would then say, we are not convinced, you know, then let's not make a mistake about it. Whatever comes in these indictments, however strong and convincing the evidence will be, Hezbollah will not accept it. Hezbollah will insist that all of this is fabricated, produced by the Americans or by the Israelis or both of them together, in order to put the Hezbollah into a corner because of the political positions they take, because of their alliance with Iran, etc. Hezbollah will not accept in any way to be indicted, regardless of what the evidence looks. So really the only way to find a compromise is to try to find, and if we can say so, an honorable way for Hariri to withdraw from this and to climb down from it. You know, that, and that's the only way to get him back into the game. And that's the only way to get a new government, because I have high doubts that Mr. Miqati will have enough support to form a government that does not include Mr. Hariri. He has presented himself as a consensus candidate, and so and I think my guess is that at least a few of the MPs who now supported him on this platform of being a consensus candidate may think again if he forms a government that is not consensual, and then may withhold their support in the vote of confidence, and then we are back to square one.
And can you assess the amount of support in Lebanon on the part of the Lebanese people for one group or another at this point?
If you look at the election results of 2009, you will find that from those people who actually cast their vote, you had a popular vote that was slightly in favor of the opposition alliance, Hezbollah, the second Shia party, Amal, and the Christian Free Patriotic Movement. And so maybe at a rate of 53-54%, and Hariri's bloc maybe 46%. That was the popular vote. As I said, Lebanon has a majority first-past-the-post system, so the actual distribution of parliamentary seats did not reflect that, came out the opposite. So basically it split down the middle. If you talk about it in terms of communities, today we have basically the two big Muslim communities, Shia and Sunni, are opposed to each other. And what you can say that the overwhelming majority of people who are either Sunni or Shia support the respective leadership, i.e. Hezbollah and the Hariris. And those who don't support that leadership and who are not happy that they, as the Shias, are even considered as part of this bloc, you know, they may want something completely different, or they may not be interested in politics at all, I don't know. Those people simply are not represented politically, they don't vote. So the people who are actually voting and who are interested in politics basically support the sectarian or the leadership that is like that they are identified with on sectarian terms, pretty much a 50-50 balance.
Thank you so much for joining us, Mr. Vimen.
It was a pleasure.
Heiko Vimen has covered Lebanon for German media since the 1990s. You can find his reports in Middle East Report online. Next time, journalist Mark Sirwat joins us from Beirut. This is a preview of our discussion about his piece in Middle East Report.
What has happened in the last few years is that, once again, a debate within Lebanon, which is largely right and left, has been infected with the sectarian virus. And they've tried to make it into a Sunni versus Shia debate. The reason why I wrote that article is to try to make it clear that that's really not the case. The real problem in Lebanon is that you have about 75% of the population lives in abject poverty. And it so happens that most of those poor people are Shia, but many, many of them are Sunnis and Christians as well. But the sectarian system prevents them from rising up in a united manner the way we see in Egypt.
And we'll link to reports from Mark Sirwat in Beirut on our website. For Talk Nation Radio, I'm Dori Smith. This program is produced in Storrs, Connecticut, and syndicated with Pacifica Network. TalkNationRadio.org for transcripts and audio. Our music is by Fritz Heed.